All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu almost 2 weeks after the ceasefire has begun in Gaza. And the meeting comes as Trump warns Israel that it would lose all support from the U.S. if it annexes the West Bank. J.D. Vance supported Trump's words. He was critical of that vote in the Knesset and said it would be very stupid if Israel proceeded down these lines. I'm joined now by Greg Carlstrom, Middle East correspondent with The Economist. Greg, good morning.
Good morning to you.
So you've had J.D. Vance going to Israel, then you've Marco Rubio going to Israel, and the Israeli press are calling this baby-sitting, a pun on what the U.S. is doing, keeping an eye on Benjamin Netanyahu, lest he breaks the ceasefire.
That is exactly what they're doing, even though some American officials have tried to insist otherwise, not just Vance and Rubio, but also earlier in the week, Steve Witkoff, Donald Trump's Middle East envoy, and Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, were in Israel for meetings. It's hard to think of a time in recent history when you've had this many high-ranking officials passing through. And I think a lot of this is a lesson learned from the previous ceasefire back in January, which began, it was meant to lead to further negotiations about the next phase of the deal. Israel refused to take part in those negotiations, and within 6 weeks, the war had resumed. So I think the Trump administration clearly trying to avoid a similar outcome here.
Now, this particular vote in the Knesset, I mean, I suppose it's symbolic in a way, because before the proposal to totally annex the West Bank could become law, it would have many parliamentary hurdles to get over.
The vote has a number of hurdles. Everything that goes through the Knesset needs three votes before it becomes law. So there's a preliminary vote, which is what happened earlier this week. Then there are committee discussions and other bureaucratic procedures that has to go through. And then there are two more votes before the full Knesset, before it becomes law. But I think it's also worth mentioning, if the Israeli prime minister really wanted to do this, if Benjamin Netanyahu wanted to annex parts of the West Bank or the whole of the West Bank, he doesn't even need the Knesset to do that. That's something that the government could do with a decision of its own. The fact that Netanyahu hasn't done that, I think, tells you that he doesn't really want to do it. Some of his coalition partners certainly do, the likes of Bezalel Smotrich, the hard-right finance minister. They would like to move forward with annexation, but I don't think the prime minister wants to. And I think on some level, he's almost grateful to have this pushback from the Americans because it gives him a very compelling excuse in front of his coalition for why he's not going to.
But is that really the case? Because he did speak in favor of annexation of the West Bank before, and now he appears to have moderated his language in that regard. And you wonder whether or not he is more conscious than his right-wing cabinet members are of exactly what Donald Trump may have privately threatened him with. Because, I mean, the war in Gaza and Gaza City, all of that was funded by the Americans, effectively.
It was. And Donald Trump, we saw his public comments to Time magazine in which he said to Israel, if you move forward with annexation, you will lose my support. And I promised Arab countries, he said, that I'm not going to allow Israel to do that. He has given a similar message to the Israelis in private. I think there's a choice here for the Trump administration. You can restrain Israel on annexation. You can hold it in the Gaza ceasefire. And then you can try to move forward with the more ambitious parts of your Middle East agenda. Trump wants to expand the Abraham Accords. He wants to work on Israeli-Saudi normalization. He wants to focus on those things. If he lets Israel annex territory in the West Bank, the rest of that regional agenda is dead. There is no prospect of expanding the Abraham Accords. And in fact, some of the countries that signed them in 2020 might leave them if Israel moves forward. with annexation. So it's a very stark choice.
He said he made promises to his friends, and he regards everybody bar Iran as his friends in the Middle East. But the likes of Qatar and Egypt and Saudi Arabia, he probably gave them some sort of an undertaking that the annexation in the West Bank would not continue. Now, it's already huge, 3.3 million Palestinians living there, but 700,000 Jewish people living there, all of whom are living on what is effectively Palestinian land.
And in some ways, I think the debate over formal annexation overlooks what's happening on the ground. Even if Israel doesn't move forward with formal annexation, it continues to expand those settlements in occupied territory. It continues to erect new checkpoints and restrict Palestinian freedom of movement, continues to demolish Palestinian homes in large parts of the West Bank. These sorts of things are not being discussed, right? Trump is effectively telling Israel, do what you want there, just don't go ahead with de jure annexation. But de facto on the ground, this reality that Israel is creating is increasingly a one-state reality, and that is going to continue whether or not this bill goes through the Knesset.
So this ceasefire, we're all describing it as fragile enough. This Bibi sitting by Rubio and Vance, and before that by the other two earlier in the week, I mean, is this going to have to continue to stop Israel continuing with, if you like, the clear out of Gaza?
I think it will have to continue. I think it will work for now, for the coming weeks, perhaps the coming month or two. This approach of just keeping an eye on the Israelis will probably restrain them. But at some point, you actually have to start making progress on the next phase of the ceasefire, this idea of a peacekeeping force that will come into Gaza to provide security and then facilitate further Israeli withdrawal from the territory. That needs to start appearing on the ground. The idea of a new transitional authority that will govern the territory, people need to be appointed to it, and it needs to start working. And I think despite J.D. Vance's very upbeat comments this week about how he thinks we're making progress, we're not actually making progress on some of those issues. There are still no countries committed to join this peacekeeping force. There are still disagreements about exactly what its mandate is going to be. And until that happens, until that force is stood up, it's very likely that we're not going to see changes on the ground in Gaza, and this ceasefire is going to remain very fragile.
Now, with all this activity, you're wondering, are the property developers still really in charge of all of this, or are there some grown-up diplomats in the State Department who have not been fired now running the show?
I think it's more the former, unfortunately. And this is not just a trend under the Trump administration. This is something that happened during Joe Biden's presidency as well. The State Department has become very, very marginalized when it comes to the Middle East, and particularly when it comes to what's happening in Israel and Palestine. So I think on the American side, it really is this handful of advisors in the White House. The question is, can you broaden that? Can you get Arab states involved, the Gulf countries, Egypt, Jordan? Can you start naming Palestinians to this transitional authority, so that they can have some stake in their own governance and their own reconstruction in Gaza? If you do that, I think you wrest some of the power away from the property developers. But again, you have to agree on who's going to be on this board to start with, and there's no list of names yet.
Well, the mistakes the Americans made in Iraq, putting, if you like, stooges into government, it didn't work. I mean, the people have to feel represented for any peace process to work. We saw that in Northern Ireland. So unless they bring in Palestinians who are credible to the world, but also credible to the Palestinian people as leaders, this whole thing is going to collapse.
Right. And that needs to include people from Gaza. Obviously, everyone, not just the Israelis, but the West and Arab states want to try and exclude Hamas from that process. But if you're going to do that, you need to allow the Palestinian Authority to have a role, the body that governs parts of the occupied West Bank. Israel so far continues to insist that there won't be any role for the PA. When you talk to some Israeli or American officials, they have these wild ideas about bringing in Palestinians from the diaspora who might be able to play a role in Gaza. And there are lots of very smart, talented Palestinians in the diaspora. But the question is, will they have credibility on the ground, you know, amongst the 2 million people who have lived through this horrific war for the past 2 years? Do they want people from outside coming in to dictate the future?
The final question really is whether or not Marwan Barghouti will be freed by Israel, because many people see him, although he's getting on a bit now, as the credible leader.
I don't think he will be. I think we have seen, not just in the discussions over a prisoner release now, but every time there have been talks about a prisoner release, Israel is willing to release just about anyone else from its jails, but not Barghouti. I think precisely because of that, precisely because they worry that he is someone who could be a not just a leader, but a unifying figure for Palestinians who have been very, very divided for years now.
Greg Carlstrom, Middle East correspondent with The Economist. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.